You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there, Dog Pound. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea, getting you ready for the Browns and the Finns this Sunday at the new Hard Rock Stadium down there in Miami. Obviously, the big news of the day, though, Corey Coleman, after we went off the air yesterday, suffered a fractured hand in practice. Now, I can tell you since that time, he has been able to go to a specialist. He has gotten that looked at, and it was determined that his fractured hand will not require surgery. He's expected to return in 4 to 6 weeks. Other Browns news as well. The team has signed linebacker Scooby Wright III to the practice squad to make room. The team released punter Michael Pilardi from the practice squad. And Scooby Wright, seventh-round pick of the Browns, a very popular guy here in the Dog Pound, is back. So nothing to worry about there for everybody who thought Scooby was gone. He is still here and is a member of the Cleveland Browns. And no surprise that they ended up taking the punter off the practice squad. They've got a punter in Britton Colquitt who has looked very good early. He's a veteran. A veteran! And they didn't need to have that second punter there on the practice squad. So no surprise there. For today's show, wanted to let you know we will have a Browns player live today between 1:30 and 2:30. We're told it should be a wide receiver, which is good, obviously coming off the heels of the Corey Coleman injury news. Hugh Jackson will be live with us today as well. We've got the FanDuel Fantasy Football Minute, so you can tweet your stardom sit-em questions to me today at Browns_daily and at Nathan Zagura as well. So all of that is coming up here on today's show. But Matt, I just wanted to ask about, you know, Corey Coleman, obviously not a good thing that he's injured, but could have been worse, could have had surgery back in 4 to 6 weeks, which puts him around October the 23rd at Cincinnati or home, somewhere between there, home October the 30th against the Jets, home November the 6th against the Dallas Cowboys.
And I think hand and feet surgeries are very unique, and here's the reason why. And just look at another rookie, Carl Nassib, who did have surgery and will probably return in about a similar time frame, maybe, you know, 3 to 5 weeks.
Can he come back earlier because he doesn't have to catch the ball? And
he can club it, and we saw, you know, them try to club it, but of course, you know, him with surgery. And there's multiple ways to look at it. Is the break at a certain point that is actually going to be, like, able to be healed on its own? And I think that's where Corey Coleman comes to play, because he can't play with a club, so you might as well cast it and have it set and have them, the bones, like, fused back together. Whereas Carl Nassib, who's obviously going to be much more physical with the use of his hands and be able to play with a club, you can do the surgery, plate it, or screw it. You know, obviously not just screw it, but use a screw.
Screw it, man.
To fuse the bones back. Fuse the bones back together and then cast on top of it, and he'll make a quicker return.
You know, it's interesting. We were just sitting there yesterday. It's funny, at the beginning of the show when we're like, you can't imagine things getting any worse for them. You know, you've lost two quarterbacks. You're down. You know, Cody Kessler is going to be making the first start of the season and the first start of his career. Three different quarterbacks in 3 weeks. Carl Nassib had been, you know, if not the most promising rookie, the second most promising rookie. He breaks his hand. He is out. And then Corey Coleman comes out, 5 catches, 104 yards, 2 touchdowns, looks like the real deal. And we're talking about, like, look, at least the number one pick looks good. He looks great. Broken hand. He's out
for 6 weeks. When I found I believe it was Bleacher Report first that confirmed the injury. And then, of course, the Cleveland Browns came out with a statement about practice. And then today, the Bleacher Report, you know, confirms and says that he's not going to have surgery, 4 to 6 week timetable. Then the Cleveland Browns, of course, followed that up. And of all the things, all the explicitives that I could have, you know, screamed, yelled, text you for some response, I just had to say, and you didn't necessarily know where I was coming from, but simply because, you know, our bond has been created via the Cleveland Browns and Cleveland Browns Daily, all I text you was, "Are you kidding me?" And it was, and it goes back to, I think, Monday, you know, talking to you about, you know, my story about walking through Dick's Sporting Goods and texting you as well and catching up and just going, for the first time ever, and I don't believe in stuff like this in my life, is there a curse or is there not? Because this many things going this wrong, and I always put things into perspective, and I go, other teams around the league have injuries too. Other teams around the league are trying to turn things around and are going young and not spending money on veterans anymore who are, you know, overpaid and underdelivered. I don't think there's a team out there that can say they're going through what the Cleveland Browns are going through. Now, the Patriots are down to their third-string quarterback, but for a different reason. And, you know, they've got their full gamut on defense, which is what makes them great. They've got their playmakers, and we're without Josh Gordon. We're without Corey Coleman. I love Terrell Pryor's comments, but he's still taking steps every week to be a wide receiver, and he's yet to be a guy in Hugh Jackson's game plan that's getting six or more targets in either football game.
Right, and he's going to be a guy that's going to be asked to carry a big load today. And how about the Patriots, though? If you would have said they're going to start off without Brady or Gronk and start 2-0, pretty impressive. And
it
they go tonight
impressive.
Against the Houston Texans, kicking off week three of the National Football League season this week. And I got to tell you, you just, when it rains, it pours. Like, the hits just keep on coming for this Browns team. And the Corey Coleman one, that hurt. Josh McCown, it hurt. Corey Coleman, her RG3, I mean, NASA.
What hurts the most?
I think probably the combination of RG3 and Josh McCown. Because if you had Josh McCown there, you still would, I think, feel.
The evaluation is still ongoing at a high level.
It's still ongoing, and you'd still feel like the offense, you knew what you were going to get out of it. Like, you knew you would. I would still feel, even without Coleman, that they'd be able to put points on the board. You know, Higgins will probably slide in. You'd have Pryor and Hawkins. You'd have to get Gary Barnage back involved more. You've seen Crows looked good. Dukes look good. You're going to have to use those guys more. But going all the way down to Cody Kessler at the quarterback position, to me, is that's the toughest thing that they're going to have to deal
with. And let me ask you this, just because I saw a report that someone fell on his hand. Or was it stepped on?
It was unclear. The one report said that he caught a pass and then somebody fell onto his hand.
Okay. At most places that I've been, starting wide receivers rarely ever hit the ground. Because I think there are catches that you want to, that you need to make in a game, that you need to lay out for in a game that you don't necessarily need to lay out for, that a coach probably believes you would have laid out for or caught in practice.
Sure.
I don't know. I find it hard to believe, you know, we have guys going to the ground that consistently in practice that a guy like Corey Coleman, in the reps that he's getting in practice, can break his hand doing so.
It sounded to me like it was a pretty freak thing, and maybe we'll get more elaboration on that from Hugh Jackson, who should be addressing the media around 1:30, right when practice ends today. So we should hopefully get some elaboration on that. We're going to get into this matchup with Miami as the show progresses as well, as we like to do on this day. We kind of get into everything and let everybody know what's going on, you know, with the matchup, what to expect, what to look for. And I was going through and doing my fantasy fact sheet, which is on clevelandbrowns.com. And taking a look at some stuff about this game. And I found a couple of stats that are troubling to me and really kind of speak to the need to clean things up a little bit on the back end of this defense. And I know we saw a very good performance from Joe Hayden last week, but nonetheless, Mike Wallace scored twice in that game. Dennis Pitta went over 100 yards receiving as a tight end. And here are the things. Listen to this. Quarterbacks have thrown for multiple passing touchdowns in 5 straight games against the Browns in 10 of the last 11. Okay. Dating back to last year, the opposing receiver who has led the team in receptions in a particular week has scored in 5 straight games.
And I just circled this, and I'll hit the pause button. Jarvis Landry has 17 receptions in 2 football games. That's 8.5 a game.
That's right, and he has caught at least 6 passes in 6 straight games, but has not scored during that span. Devontae Parker, 13 targets, 8 catches, 106 yards last week. He has at least 87 yards receiving in 4 straight games. He has 2 100-yard games in that span. Oh, by the way, a wide receiver has caught a touchdown in 9 straight games against the Browns. Those are significant streaks, by the way, when you go around and look around the league. And I know that, well, of course a receiver is going to catch one. That does not happen every single week. And teams do not throw multiple passing touchdowns against you 10 out of 11 weeks.
Agree.
That doesn't happen. Last year, it was 14 out of 16 weeks against the New Orleans Saints, and they had historically the worst season as a pass defense you could have. The other one, tight ends, and you talked about Dennis Pitta. You pointed that out on the Browns Countdown Show on News Channel 5, which is every Sunday at 11 a.m., that watch out for Dennis Pitta. What he do goes over 100 yards. So far, tight ends are averaging 9 catches and 96.5 yards against the Browns through 2 weeks.
And that responsibility falls on DeMario Davis, Christian Kirksey, Jordan Poyer, Kindred, and Ibrahim Campbell.
And they've got to do a better job. And I think some of them, you saw some of the play action and the crosses. They were just running those crossing routes. And it looked like at times we were playing almost a matchup zone where one guy would pass to the other guy. But, and you could probably speak to this, but what I noticed on tape is when you're doing that and you're passing a guy, you're in your zone and your feet are moving, yes. But if a guy crosses into your zone, he's already running. So when you start to run after him,
the interception point is not where he's at. It's where he's going.
It's where he's going. And what's happening is they're getting to our linebacker. They're running. Our linebacker then trails, and they're able to catch it. And then we catch tackle him. We're there.
But on third and three, it's a five-yard gain. It's a first down.
And that happened probably five times in that game against the Ravens.
And how
do you deal with that as a linebacker?
It is frustrating.
Do you have to see where he's coming from and then take more of an angle when you get going?
And also, based on formation, and we had an opportunity to talk to Joe Hayden about his first interception, and you and I went back and watched it.
Which will be tonight on the Hugh Jackson Coaches Show
exactly.
at 7 o'clock.
And it just talked about Tremont Williams and the amount of time that he spends studying film. And I think the dead giveaway is that process of elimination that I always talk about being a defender. What's the down and distance? What personnel do they have on the field? Where are the guys lined up within that personnel? Like, what's the formation? And then you lastly go to, what do they like to do out of this formation based on what we saw watching their week one game against the Buffalo Bills, their tendency in the past, if you studied games from last year, and or if they've done anything like that in the preseason. And by process of elimination, when they're in those, it was like, tight bunches, tight 2x2 bunches, it's, one up and one under. And it just creates it naturally creates a margin. But if you're anticipating it, you align, and this is the one thing I always even talk to my kids on the high school levels, if you align properly and align for success, you'd be surprised how easy the game can get and how many more plays you can make if you are just lining up right.
It's amazing.
And that's where the coaching really comes into play. Bossing and bowing as a linebacker. Bosses, backers over strong. When they have a heavy run tendency. This is what I learned from Wade Phillips. It's like, it's backyard football. If they align five guys to the right and two guys to the left, where do you think they're going to run or throw the football? So move your butt over there. And if they hit you backside, you got to be good enough to read out. So it's little things like that. It all comes down to film study and anticipation. If you align inside, you're one step closer to that intersection point that you're talking about, as opposed to aligning 1 yard wider and then having to make up for that one step, that 1 yard to that intersection point. And that's the one thing I think I learned throughout my career is, Don't underestimate their speed. Don't overestimate your speed. And everyone always gives themselves the benefit of the doubt, but those guys get paid a lot of money too to not get hit and beat you to that intersection point.
Yeah, and that's something that's going to be a big thing today this weekend, because you've got Jordan Cameron, a very effective tight end who's got some movement skills, and we saw went to the Pro Bowl here with the Cleveland Browns. And then you've got, of course, Jarvis Landry, who they like to use in the slot, who's very effective. You've got Devontae Parker and Kenny Stills.
He didn't score a lot of touchdowns, but I like Jarvis.
Great
Landry.
Hands, doesn't drop the ball. And they've got two guys on the outside, juicy, though, that can get vertical in Devontae Parker and Kenny Stills. So this is going to be a challenge for the back end. Ryan Tannehill is going to come out, and he's going to be throwing the football. By the way, did you know?
What?
Ryan Tannehill is not only the leading passer for the Miami Dolphins, he's also their leading rusher with 52 yards in just two games. Also has the team lead in rushing touchdowns with one.
And yards per carry
at
4.7.
He's very effective this year, Mr. Ryan Tannehill.
But yet they sit at 0-2.
They sit at 0-2. They are looking to get off the schneid. The Browns looking to get off the schneid with a depleted team. And it's amazing just on Twitter. It's almost like people finally feel sorry for the Browns. Like Nashville, it's like, what is, like, did somebody had a very funny one that said, you knew what you were getting into when you signed the contract for the Cavs championship, and it was like, sincerely, the devil. Like, you knew, Cleveland, you knew what you were getting into. But hopefully, no injuries. Hopefully, we can get through a day of practice today without an injury. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. Guys
do. It doesn't.
I mean, look, Teddy Bridgewater went down, no contact injury in practice. It does happen, but it is not common.
It's not common. And even
certainly not a bone.
Even furthermore, I would say after probably week five of the season, so as we creep into the middle of October, it's even more rare for guys to get hurt in practice because the amount of time that you're actually spending in shoulder pads is so limited. And the tempo of practice never reaches 100%, regardless of who you are. It's a extremely accelerated walkthrough with a limited amount of banging because of the amount of banging that you do on a Sunday.
We don't want that to be limited. When we return on CBD, we'll open up the phone lines 216-578-0850. Still to come, Hugh Jackson. We will hopefully have either Hawk or Hollywood Higgins. That's what we're hoping for in studio today. We'll talk about that. What receiver do you want to see step up with Corey Coleman out? Get your fantasy football questions in as well. Use the hashtag AskTFC. We'll get to those in the second hour here on CBD.
Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, 216-578-0850 as we get ready for the Browns and the Finns. All right, Matt, let's take a look at this. Let's get into some of the matchups, and let's get into it right now. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball for the Browns. Browns offense against the Miami Dolphins defense. So obviously that's Cody Kessler at quarterback, and he's going to contend with a very good defensive front here for this team down in Miami. And their front, when you look at the top four guys down there lining up, you've got Cameron Wake, although he's playing a limited role right now, four-time Pro Bowl selection. You've got Ndamukong Suh, a four-time Pro Bowler. Then you've got the big man, Jordan Phillips, 6'6", 335.
He's a first-round pick or early
out
second?
Out of Oklahoma. I thought he was
early second.
Early second last year.
Correct.
Yes. He was one of the guys when the Browns were looking at defensive tackles, et cetera. That was one of the things that they looked at there. And then they've got Mario Williams, another four-time Pro Bowler. And then behind them, you've got Jason Jones, who's in his ninth NFL season and leads the team right now with 1.5 sacks. So that front right there against the Browns line, which is going to be now left to right, Joe Thomas, Joel Bitonio, John Greco, Alvin Bailey, and Austin Pastore. They are going to have their hands full in this one. It is going to be very, very difficult.
It is. And I think what's so nice about this Dolphins team, I guess you could say, not nice for us, but nice for them, is their ability to rush four consistently and maybe add a fifth guy here and there, and you still have, you know, six droppers in coverage. So you're going against a rookie quarterback. You're depleted, probably your number one wide receiver right now in Corey Coleman. And so that plays into the hands of the Miami Dolphin defense. And to be very honest, I wouldn't expect the Miami Dolphins, even though they probably have, you know, packages of different blitzes, and zone blitzing is probably something you're going to see a lot of. You know, allow them to bring four and maybe drop a guy like Mario Williams, even though I know that, you know, he was dropping too much in Buffalo, or even Cameron Wake, you know, into one of those passing lanes to confuse Cody Kessler. All those things that we talked about week one that we may potentially do against Carson Wentz is a lot of what you're going to see out of the Dolphins defense. And I think first and foremost is our ability to handle Ndamukong Suh, because I think he had his career high in tackles, which means
he's very productive. 12 tackles.
12 tackles. Those are Fletcher Cox type of numbers, you know, but that's not usually what was the knock against Ndamukong Suh at times last year with the Miami Dolphins was a lack of effort.
Lack of effort.
So, yep. He's got the big contract. He's yet to live up to it from a Miami Dolphins standpoint. And so maybe he's rejuvenated and playing as the force, not yet affecting the passer the way that we know Ndamukong Suh can, but affecting the run, which plays into the hands of everyone else defensively around him.
12 tackles last week for him. He's got the second most sacks by an NFL defensive tackle since 2010 with 43. By the way, Cam Wake, sixth in NFL history by the most sacks by an undrafted player with 72nd in Dolphins history behind only the great Jason Taylor. Let's go to their linebackers. Now they play a 4-3, a traditional 4-3 front. Koa Misi is one of the linebackers. Jelani Jenkins, the other on the outside. And then in the middle, Kiko Alonso, back where he should be. He's got 22 tackles already through two games. He is tied for the NFL lead with two fumble recoveries as well. That's a good group, an athletic group. I think Koa Misi is a very good player as well. His former second-round pick in 2010, athletic. And then you got Jelani Jenkins on the other side, who had a tackle for loss, a pass defense, and five tackles. He's playing well also. It's a good front seven for these guys. And when you have guys up front as good as the front four are, your linebackers are free to make plays.
Absolutely. And I think, as I understand the Miami Dolphins, Koa Misi to me is like your thumping Sam linebacker.
Yep.
Whereas Kiko Alonso is your Mike backer. So you're going to have guys like Ndamukong Suh and the big Jordan Phillips keeping him free. You know, kind of very similar to the way Luke Kuechly runs very free in that Panthers defense. And then, you know, Jelani Jenkins is like your overhang, will linebacker, athletic guy who's going to walk out on a guy like Gary Barnage when he's flexed out and play outside the box. So the one thing is I look at this defense, you know, with the names that they have, that's why it's first or second draft pick or Pro Bowler at almost every level or names that we're very familiar with for one reason or another. And that's what I'm saying. Kiko Alonso is yet to be a Pro Bowler. I don't think drafted in the first or second round. Maybe, what was he, a middle round pick?
Who, Kiko Alonso?
Yeah.
It doesn't say.
I think he was a middle round pick, but a guy that we know that's been traded from, you know, one place to another.
Buffalo.
And great in Buffalo, then, you know, of course, hasn't quite worked out well anywhere else, but now playing his best football right now through 2 weeks.
Then you go to the secondary, and this is where the Browns have an advantage, or had one perhaps prior to the Corey Coleman injury, but this is where they must get their advantage. Now, to take advantage of the secondary, what do you need? You need time, and that was, we've said all along, is going to be difficult. Their corners, Byron Maxwell and Xavien Howard, neither one of these guys are big-time players. Howard, a rookie second-round pick this year. Maxwell's been bounced around the league as well from Seattle all the way to Philly, then back down to Miami where he was traded. He's got 9 interceptions since 2013, but he's been victimized. Xavien Howard's been victimized. These guys are beatable. Howard, again, a young rookie, the first rookie since Sean Smith, by the way, in 2009 to start for them. The backup corners are Bobby McCain, a 5th-round pick last year who plays in the slot for them, and Tony Lippett, who's a 5th-round pick for them last year as a wide receiver is where he played for Michigan State. So this is where you can attack these guys. We'll talk about their safeties in just a second, but now let's go to the podium as Browns head coach Hugh Jackson is making his way in from practice right now to address the media. He'll have the latest on Corey Coleman, and here's Hugh.
I'm sorry. How does the broken... Oh, in practice. Got made through the whole practice. We didn't know it was that way until we had a chance to x-ray him after practice. So just, you know, again, football. Those things happen. Glad we'll get him back, though, hopefully soon. So, again, it's unfortunate. Guy was playing good. But that's part of this thing called football. So on we go.
Does it feel just like a barrage of these injuries? I mean, one after one?
Seen it before. Been through it before. You know, the fun part, not the fun part, I shouldn't say that. There's nothing fun about that. But at the same time, I think we're going to get a lot of these guys back at some point. You know, it'd be different if I felt like they were out for the year. They're not. You know, these guys are going to come back, and hopefully they come back and hit the ground running where they were. So we hate it, you know, but these things do happen from time to time.
The world is still not rocking.
No. I keep telling you guys, I'm not blinking. I think you guys know me. I mean, I'm never going to do that. I mean, our football team and this organization depends on me to have a positive outlook about it all, and I do because I've seen this before. We all have. When you're changing things, and you're trying to come from where we've been, these are the things you have to go through. You know that saying, without struggle, there'd be no progress. Well, we're struggling, you know, but we're going to get some progress here pretty soon. I promise you that.
Positive side that you expect to get Corey back, but after he just had a breakout game, how disappointing is it for him?
Oh, no, he's very frustrated. I'd be first to tell you that. He likes to play, and I don't think Corey's ever had a broken bone in his body, you know, so... This is new to him, you know, but at the same time, this is an opportunity for him to grow in a lot of different areas, you know, that pertains to football and conditioning, learning more about nutrition and all the other parts of this they'll call pro football. So we're not going to let anything slide that way. I think he's going to keep growing and keep getting better in a bunch of other areas while he heals up. And then hopefully that'll propel him on for the rest of the season. Good. He's doing well. You know, he needs to play more. All those young guys need to play more. And obviously they'll get an opportunity to play more now. So it's been good. Those guys have been chomping at the bit to get out there and have more opportunities. So they're going to get those. I'm sorry. I didn't. He's progressing. He's progressing every day, you know. But if, like you said, if he doesn't, then obviously Derek will be in there and be playing quite a bit.
Just to clarify one question, would you describe that as an accident, or was it a cornerback or a defender on Coleman where he shouldn't have been?
Oh, no. Again, it's just nobody really knows exactly when it happened. You know, I think it was a ball that was caught. And then, you know, obviously I think people think it was a jammed finger, you know, because it's probably what it looks like, you know, at the beginning, and then all of a sudden it progresses to more. But Corey practiced the whole day, you know, and then at the end, you know, I think he went to meetings, and after meetings, you know, I think all of a sudden it felt like, well, maybe something's not right here. But Corey's a tough guy, you know, so at the same time, I don't think it was anybody's fault. It's not all of a sudden a defender did something or he did something. It's just unfortunate. You know, you have practice, somebody stick a hand in someplace, and this is what you get every now and then. It's just part of it. Oh, yes, he was. That's what I'm saying. He was practicing. I mean, the guy, he's tough. You know, he practiced, and that's what was amazing, you know. I probably was the most surprised when our medical staff came up to tell me, you know. I almost fell out of my chair. I told me, you got to be kidding me, you know, because the guy practiced, just like you said, the whole practice. So, again, it's these things happened, but we're not gonna all of a sudden, you know, slow down, or they're not going to cancel games or postpone games or anything like that. Miami's saying, come on down, and we got to go play.
Hey, you coach with Vance?
Vance Joseph. Yes, sir. And Matt Burt, he's a linebacker coach here.
And what he's doing on defense, is it at all surprising to you? Did you envision him as a coordinator playing this kind of defense?
No, not at all. I mean, he has extensive background in a lot of different schemes. He's been around National Football League. You know, obviously he's with a good defense in Cincinnati. He's been in San Francisco. You know, he's been in the Texans with Wade Phillips. So he has an extensive background on how to play defense and adapt defenses to his personnel. And I think that's what he's done. You know, you have incredible front seven, you know, led by Sue and the rest of the gang, Mario Williams and that crew. So I'm sure he's had to do what he needed to do to make sure that those players are playing at a high level. And that's what he's done.
Similar to what Philadelphia did?
Somewhat. Philadelphia, Cincinnati, you know, Tampa, you know, they all have some of those same elements. But I think what he's trying to do, what he's accomplishing, is maybe a little bit different on the back end than what those teams have done.
You, even though I know this is football, to lose your, you know, first two quarterbacks,
right,
your number one receiver, your starting defensive end, your starting center, all in your first two, you know, games on the job, you know, that's a lot. Would you say that, you know, I've heard you say you're built for this.
Oh, yes.
And would you also say that, I mean, do you think you would not have handled this as well had it happened in your first time around as a head coach?
Yeah, y'all would have been digging me out of the locker room if I hadn't done this before somewhere buried deep, you know. But no, probably so. I mean, because this is not, to me, I wouldn't want anyone in their first opportunity to go through this. But I know that these things happen. Having been a head coach before in this league, having been a coordinator, even having been a position coach where you lose one of your best players at the position, you can't worry about those things, you know, because you know that that's just part of this. There's a whole bunch of teams across the, a whole bunch of players across the league have been lost by many teams, and that's well documented. So these things happen. Maybe not to the rate we have. I'll be first to tell you that I've never lost two quarterbacks in 2 weeks and turn around and lose a young defensive player and here comes your receiver. No, I mean, that's a bit much. But I do know that these things happen. And like I said, if we wasn't going to get them back, maybe I wouldn't be sitting here right now. But we are. So, and I think that's just part of it. And our guys, they'll be the first to tell you. I honestly, I haven't really made any mention of it other than here we go. you know, because that's all you can do. I mean, they're not going to change the schedule. They're not going to tell us you guys get a couple weeks off and see if they can heal up. They say you got a game to play. So we have a game to play, and we're looking forward to playing. Yes, he would. Yes, sir. Could be Higgins. It could be, you know, it could be Ricardo Lewis. It could be Seth DeVal. It could be a lot of different. All depends on personnel packages and how we play.
What could you say about the practice week that Kessler's had?
He's had a good week. He's done a good job. I mean, we all know he's very accurate. You know, he knows where to go with the ball, how to go there with the ball. He knows how to get us in the right protection and do all those things. You know, again, we're practicing. It's not a game. But again, thus far, the 2 days he's had, you know, he's done them really well. And I'm not surprised by that. It's exactly what I've seen since he started. He's just getting more reps at it, more turns at it. He's done a good job.
He doesn't seem like, when he talks to us, he just doesn't seem like a typical rookie. How much did the intangibles, the character, the leadership, and just the way he carries himself and all those facets play into, you know, your evaluation of him and your decision to ultimately?
Oh, yeah, all those things play into it. You know, you want a guy that is unflappable a little bit, a guy that's, you know, that doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low, that stays very consistent, guy that can demonstrate poise and toughness and resiliency, because that's what this game demands, you know. So, yeah, he had a lot of characteristics that we liked, you know, and he needs to display those this weekend. I think he will. But, again, as I said before, I know we, you know, a lot of us make it about Cody. It's really about our team. You know, in order for Cody to play well, his team around him has to play well, offensively, defensively, and special teams. It won't just be him. He just got to do his part to the best of his ability.
Yeah, what has Tannehill showed you, particularly in that second half last week?
He can throw the ball. I think that's well documented. He also can run. He's a talented athlete, you know, and he knows how to make plays. He knows how to get his playmakers the ball, and I think he's a good quarterback.
Three consecutive weeks of three different quarters.
It's tough, you know, but we feel like our offense is flexible. You know, I've said that since day one. You know, we have to have an offense that's flexible enough to adapt for these particular situations, because we all know that, you know, it's unfortunate if people do get hurt. So you have to be able to have enough variety in your system to, when people do, you're able to do something else. And I think we've practiced enough things to where who's ever playing quarterback for us, running back, receiver, that we can adapt. And I think our guys have done an outstanding job of doing that.
I can be.
I've done a little bit of it all in my career. But, you know, you do what you got to do to win, and that's what our staff's about, you know. And the hard part for us right now is we haven't tasted winning, you know. So a lot of us, rather it's stay all night, stay all day, whatever it takes. You know, there's no time as a coach, and I think it's that way throughout the National Football League. We don't worry about time. We just get done what we need to get done and kind of go from there. But our guys work at it, and I'm proud of our staff. They've done a terrific job of trying to prepare our players. I think our players have done a good job. We're working extremely hard at it. We just, you know, again, we just need to get over that wall. Mary, go right ahead.
How much does it help that Cody has run a pro-style offense? He has some experience in a West Coast system, and he kind of can speak your language a little bit already coming in.
Well, I mean, we're a little different, though. He's had to adapt. He really has, and I think he's done a good job. He's very bright, so, and he works at it. He's a tireless worker, so he's adapted, you know, our verbiage, our terminology, and I think he's done a good job. But it does help that he, you know, has been around some people that maybe myself and Pep knows, because it gives them opportunity to bounce things off of them and understand what we're trying to accomplish a little bit better. Yeah, I mean, I thought he, obviously he has tremendous get off. His initial quickness is extremely good, you know, so he's able to push tackles and create pressure. And I thought, you know, he did a good job. I think he's learning how to play within our base scheme of defense. I don't think he's ever really played outside linebacker, so he's adapting that way, but when it's time to put his hand down and rush the passer, he does know how to do that.
Good.
Thank you very much.
It's Browns head coach Hugh Jackson there. One of the guys that he named as having to step up now with the injury to Corey Coleman is Ricardo Lewis, the next pick of the Browns at the wide receiver position. Remember, Lewis was the fourth rounder, Hollywood Higgins, Jordan Payton, fifth rounders in this draft. He will join us here in the Dog Bowl in Berea when we return on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea as we wait for Ricardo Lewis to make his way up here. We were going through their secondary for the Miami Dolphins, and we thought the cornerbacks Byron Maxwell and Xavien Howard, rookie out of Baylor. By the way, somebody that Corey Coleman probably knows a lot about. Some of the tricks of the trade for Xavien Howard. They battled at Baylor last season. Would have been nice to see that matchup.
It would have.
A couple Baylor boys getting after it. Now, you go to the safeties. They've got Issa Abdul-Kudus, or Kudus. I don't say his name right. Who is okay. Strong safety. The good safety there, Rashad Jones, Pro Bowler last year. 9 tackles last week. He had 5 interceptions last year. Third Dolphin safety to post 500 career tackles, along with Brock Marion. Remember him? And Jeremiah Bell. Rashad Jones is a darn good player, and he is really the anchor on the back end of that defense.
Yeah, and I think as you look at them as one of their weak spots, the one thing that kind of concerns me going into this football game is will we be able to challenge them?
That's the question, and I think that you're right. It's a big question. Huge question.
Can we protect long enough to have Cody Kessler deliver the football down the field? Will Hugh Jackson have down the field throws even in the game plan? And I think you need some, but are we going to have enough time? Are we going to have confidence? And can Cody Kessler show enough between Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday practices to prove to Hugh Jackson that having some of those down the field throws are confidence building throws for Cody Kessler and confidence calling them for Hugh Jackson?
Yeah, and the guy that so far, you know, when you look at it, you've got Xavien Howard. So far, when he has been attacked through the air, here's what's happened. Xavien Howard on the season, been targeted 15 times. He's given up 8 catches for 70 yards, an NFL quarterback rating of 66. That's not bad, by the way, for a rookie to come out and do this. So where do you have to go on this team? That's really the question, and that's something the Browns are going to have to try to figure out when you're going through the secondary. Where have they struggled? Well, I can tell you right now, Byron Maxwell's given up 101 yards on the season, but the guy that they've been attacking is in the slot. That is Bobby McCain. He has given up, and Michael Thomas, the two backups have been thrown at 9 times. They've given up 9 catches for 98 yards and 2 touchdowns and a quarterback rating of about 140. So when you look at this game, whether it's Ricardo Lewis that comes in or whether it is Hollywood Higgins, whoever's working in the slot, that's where I believe that you're going to have an opportunity to attack them. That has been the weakest part of their pass defense so far. It's been that slot corner. And that's where they're going to have to attack. McCain and Thomas have both worked in the slot. Those 9 catches they've given up for 98 yards and 2 touchdowns, all in the slot.
So do you believe that while, you know, Corey Coleman, Terrell Pryor, Andrew Hawkins have kind of been uniform in regards to where they line up at the X and the Z and the slot, that could be a wrinkle in our offensive game plan is to move these guys around and to create an advantageous matchup for us and then a route that some of those two inside guys have struggled with, maybe against Terrell Pryor, a bigger physical wide receiver, and then you come right back with him with a scat guy like Andrew Hawkins, and you win inside because, as I've always said, for a young, inexperienced quarterback, some of your best friends are not making those long throws outside, you know, those NFL throws, but yet making the inside throws, you know, to the slot receiver and or to Gary Barnage working against linebackers or safeties. They're a 10 to 12 yard route by either of those instead of a 30 yard throw on a deep comeback across the field to the outside the numbers.
The other guy, so you're talking about in the middle of the field.
Yes.
So who else is in the middle of the field for the Dolphins? It's Kiko Alonso. Thus far in 2016, he's been targeted 8 times. He's given up 7 catches for 88 yards and a touchdown. Martellus Bennett victimized the Dolphins last week. He had over 100 yards receiving. Danny Amendola, the slot receiver for the Patriots, had 2 touchdowns in that game. So it was the tight end and the slot receiver. Now, Andrew Hawkins, I imagine, will move inside, but here's something to keep an eye on as well. I would not be surprised to see some formations after talking to Hugh Jackson. You'll hear the full interview tonight on the Hugh Jackson Coaches Show on News Channel 5 at 7 o'clock. I think that with the shortage at receiver, don't be surprised to see Duke Johnson get some reps as the slot receiver.
I'm fine with that. I am.
Good.
And the good thing about it is Duke Johnson can play our slot receiver and not have to run a route over 7 yards. He's that good in space.
And the guy took on a third down against the Ravens, lined up on the corner against, I believe it was either Jimmy Smith or Sharice Wright. It was against one of the corners and ran a slant and won the route and converted the first down. So I wouldn't be surprised. That's where they're weak in the middle of this defense, whether it's the slot corner or whether it is the linebacker. Kiko Alonso has struggled, as I've said, in coverage so far this year. Out wide, it is going to be a little bit tougher, although you would think against Maxwell and Howard you can have some success. But so far, quarterbacks have really kind of worked the middle of the field. We saw that again, as I said, last week. Amendola, 2 touchdowns. Martellus Bennett, over 100 yards. And a touchdown. Now, when one guy goes down, one man's injury is another man's opportunity. And while the Browns are going to be without Corey Coleman for 4 to 6 weeks, fortunately, they drafted 3 other rookie wide receivers, and one of them joins us in the studio right now, and that is Ricardo Lewis, the Browns' 4th-round pick out of Auburn. Ricardo, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
First of all, I'm sure you had this game on your calendar, scheduled, circled on the calendar for a while, going back home to Miami.
Yeah, definitely, man. Family, the whole city coming out to watch me play.
And it looks like you will have more opportunity following the injury to Corey Coleman. Kind of how have you guys picked up that slack today in practice with Coleman? We know he practiced fully yesterday before it was known that he was hurt. Mm-hmm. How have you kind of, and Hollywood Higgins and Jordan Payton, the other rookies, stepped up?
Well, you know, that gives us more reps in practice. You know, it gives us a chance to show what we can do. You know, moving around different positions and getting ready to play, you know. We've been preparing as a starter since the first day of the training camp. So now that we have an opportunity to step up and make a play or, you know, do whatever we had to do, we're going to do it.
What kind of routes are you most comfortable running right now?
I mean, every route, really.
Good.
But, you know, I have my speed, so going deep and running past defenders is probably number one. But that's what they're going to be expecting. So
I'm fine with that. And speaking of your speed, I think, you know, early on, as you said, you know, not really getting all the reps now with Corey Coleman down, you're getting more reps at wide receiver. But how has it been adjusting for you, who's played, you know, prototypically wide receiver at Auburn? You come in and to make this football team with the depth that we had at wide receiver, you've been playing a lot of special teams. How has that been on special teams, you know, running down there, using your speed, using your physicality, and just working with Coach Tabor in general?
Man, it's been great. You know, in college, I play all 4 years in special teams. So a lot of the technique stuff that they have me doing is, you know, familiar. So I just apply what I learned and, you know, what Tavis is teaching me now. And, of course, using my speed to just beat defenders and playing fast. You know, applying that as well on offense. You know, you have to play fast and beat the defender. So
seems like it's been very, as you talked about, you did in college, very natural for you. That's somewhere that you've already kind of excelled. How excited are you getting an opportunity to go back out there and play wide receiver, though? It's something you did very well at Auburn.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun for me because I've been working on it. You know, I've been working and perfecting my craft every single day. You know, getting every chance I get, you know, to go in and practice and get a rep, I make sure it's my best rep of the day. And, you know, I've been getting way better, and I finally get a chance to go out and show what I've been working on and, you know, how much work I've been putting in.
How helpful has it been to have a veteran coach like Al Saunders to kind of guide you young pups?
Man, it's great. You know, he's always telling us how he's been in the league 37 years. And, you know, he knows great players when he sees them, so he's really hard on, you know, some of us. And, as you know, whatever he says, I listen to him. Even though it may seem like a little thing, he might be whispering it. I listen to him because, you know, the smallest things, smallest details that he tells us are what's going to make a difference in, you know, separating from other people and other teams.
And another coach that it's the head coach. And I think as when Hugh Jackson was hired, Al Saunders was one of the first guys walking around the building, not even knowing that he had been hired yet or confirmed yet. But how has it been just having a head coach like Hugh who comes in motivated and optimistic and is just preaching winning each and every day, winning at your craft, winning at wide receiver, winning on kickoff, and how that just slowly becomes a part of who you are as a person and a player?
I love it, you know, because a lot of people don't have that mindset of just winning every single thing, every single rep. You know, he reminds you every chance he gets, you know, we have to win this, win that. So coming in as a rookie, you know, that's my mindset already, you know, winning. And for him to harp on it and make it, you know, more of a big deal, it makes me work even harder on, you know, little things.
How's Cody Kessler looked so far in practice this week?
He's been looking great, man. He's been looking great. We stay after practice a lot and, you know, working on his craft as well. So I feel like he's ready. You know, he's been working on it, you know, becoming a starter. So
Is everybody kind of handling, taking it all in stride? I mean, you really don't have a choice, I suppose, but week one was RG3, week two, Josh McCown, week three, now Cody Kessler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. I've never been through that, but, you know, when once guy goes down, the next guy has to step up.
That's definitely true, and we've had an opportunity to talk to a lot of guys in this year's draft class, Ogba and NASA, but they talk about the bond that they have, you know, kind of being in the same room. But just talk about the bond that you four wide receivers have being drafted in the same class, and then collectively the bond that all 14 of you really have, knowing that you're part of, or you're a building block as a part of the foundation the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, Sashi Brown are trying to create here in Cleveland.
Yeah, you know, well, Coach Saunders, as our receivers coach, he harps on being a family. So, you know, it was tough at first for the rookies coming in and, you know, adjusting and learning new things. And, you know, just being in the NFL was just kind of tough. But we had to come together and, you know, talk about certain things that we need to work on, and we'll stay after practice. You know, we'll just, you know, create a bond off the field, make sure that we, you know, helping each other achieve the goals that we have in mind for, you know, whatever the coach wanted us to do, whatever we wanted to do. And, you know, it's been great, you know, having them guys coming in, and especially the older guys that's been here, like Hawk. He's always, you know, teaching us new techniques and giving us motivation to tell us what we need to do, what not to do, to, you know, help us be successful.
What would you say is kind of the biggest change you've seen so far from college to the pros in terms of being a wide receiver?
I would say just technique-wise, the little things matter. You know, the small things like, you know, coming off the ball full speed, or, you know, rolling off the ball of your foot, you know, things like that where I didn't know in college. You know, help me make a difference, because I, you know, being as fast as I am, the burst off the line is one of the most important things. You know, you scare defenders, you make them think you're going deep, next thing you know, you're running the comeback.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that, you know, just adjusting to it was kind of, you know, one of the biggest things. You know, it's fast. Everything is just, let's go. You know, I wasn't really used to that, but now I am.
So. And speaking about what's fast is the Dolphins game is going to be here before you know it. Mm-hmm. And last question for me, and we know you got to get back to meetings and such, but just what have you seen on film from the Miami defense, and how prepared are you guys collectively as an offensive unit to attack a pretty good defense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. We know their strengths. You know, strengths mean on the D-line. You know, they have a couple of veterans on defense in the safety position. And they run to the ball. That's one thing that we've seen on film, that they get to the ball, they run to the ball. So for us as receivers on the perimeter, whenever we know the running back going to have the ball, we're going to have to make sure we stay on our blocks as long as we can. Because, you know, Crow broke for, you know, a long touchdown.
Yep.
So if we don't block downfield, he's not going to be able to do that again.
Right.
So we have to make sure, we know, we handle our business on our side.
Probably got a little experience run blocking as a wide receiver at Auburn, I would imagine.
Yeah, you can't play for miles on them. You ain't blocking. So
you talked about earlier about kind of the bond between all the rookies, but you got a lot of people with some interest from the Miami area going down there yourself. I know Duke Johnson as well, and then Jamar Taylor, who you've probably been going against in practice, played for the Miami Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Do you guys kind of talk about that going home and you know, making a statement?
Yeah, we were talking about it the other day, actually, in the steam room. He was telling me how, you know, he's ready to go back, and you know, they probably going to be going at him, but he's going to be ready for it. You know, me going back, you know, showing out in front of my family and friends, you know, it's a big deal.
That's the best.
Yeah.
Well, Ricardo, we certainly wish you the best of luck, and obviously excited for your opportunity this Sunday, and hopefully for the Browns, for you to get your first touchdown, the Browns get the first win, and everybody be happy here in Cleveland.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Ricardo Lewis, Browns rookie wide receiver out of Auburn, fourth round pick this year. He's got his homecoming this week against the Miami Dolphins in South Beach. We'll have more CBD when we return right after this.